Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Josh Brown, I'm back.
Hello.
What you been doing?
Just been crying that you're not here to talk to when all the games have been out. I'm like, oh, what a selfish guy having a child. What about me?
Look, I can't play games with him either. So at some point, it makes sense to come back, talk to you, get the takes are flowing.
Hey, hi. Major life changes on both halves of this podcast. You brought life into the world.
Yep.
I added a new step to my skincare routine.
I thought you were going to tell me...
Four steps now.
Very good.
Thank you.
I thought you were going to tell me that you got into Final Fantasy. That was your big that's your big life step. What's the skincare routine?
It's nothing fancy.
Okay.
You know, it's a cleanser. It's a little acid that I put on. Ooh. It's a moisturizer, and I've put an SPF in there now.
Nice.
I thought, you know, I'm getting on.
That's
I don't want to look haggard.
Just getting on.
You're the smoothest man alive. Scared about turning 30, man.
No.
Scared about turning 30. And I know you shouldn't. Everyone's like, it's fine. I know it is. Mm. But I feel personally like I've aged about 10 years in the last five. I was doing all right. You know what I mean? And then something happened.
You
probably
know, like
the worldwide pandemic. But
it might be. The buildup of stress eventually comes through in the amount of wrinkles on the face.
Yeah.
It does seem to crop through. You know the way that like wrestlers age?
Yeah.
Like, I remember thinking as I was growing up watching WWF back in the day that it had only been like 2 or 3 years, but they all look like they'd aged a hell of a lot more.
Yeah,
it's like
man.
How presidents age as well. There's
definitely
just some weird time, literally just stress.
Wrestlers, presidents, and football managers.
Yeah.
I think maybe the worst aging people on this planet, perhaps.
It's not good. But yes, I have popped a sprog. It was very lovely. Very much a mixed bag of all sorts of different things. One day you're crying at the absolute beauty of it. The next day you're crying at the lack of sleep. It's a right mix of stuff. But I wouldn't change it for the world. Massive shout out to all the parents, the caregivers, the people raising the children, raising the next generation. It's a hell of a thing to go through. And shared strength, I would say.
You know what? That's beautiful. I thought you would have been somewhat prepared for the lack of sleep, not because of, you know, actual
I never
preparation.
Slept anyway.
That's what I mean.
I hate
just
sleeping.
From the amount you used to gain into the early hours, but I imagine it's a completely different kind of tired.
Oh, God. Every single parent, every single person looking after a child will know this, but they tend to feed every 2 to 3 hours, or 1 to 3 hours sometimes, depending on if they're cluster feeding, which means that you're back awake every sort of 2 to 3 hours all throughout the night. They have no circadian rhythm. They have no idea what the day, night. You can kind of teach them a little bit. You draw the curtains, you get it a bit darker. And in my case, my kid will sleep through a little bit better on the night times, but he's still waking up screaming once the feed. And so there's a reason sleep deprivation is a torture technique. I've thought this since the beginning. And just when you're about to drop off to sleep, wow, you're back up again.
No.
Need to do more stuff. But again, I wouldn't trade it. And just 2 seconds, 3 seconds of a little smile, of a little bit of responsiveness from the entity that you're raising is the best feeling in the world.
Well, I was saying before we started recording, when we were doing our little debrief downstairs, you know, I think that's all life is about, whether it's raising a child or whether it's just living. You go through all the horrible stuff for 3 seconds of a smile and it makes it all worthwhile, doesn't it?
It really does. It reminds me of that quote. I don't know if it was from the Queen, but there's some quotes. There's a quote about what's the whole thing about it's better to light a candle than curse the darkness.
Never
and it's
heard
like
that,
I love that line because I don't know if it was the Queen or not, but I like that line. Because it does, it only takes the smallest of light to puncture through the darkness, and it only takes the smallest amount of something being slightly reciprocal for a newborn to be like, oh, it was all worth it. 9 hours of trying to get you down, it's
that's
all right.
That's it, man. this guy, man, he has 4 weeks off, he has no sleep, and MFA comes back quoting the Queen, man. What's
it's
that
gotta
about?
Be done. And I also will say, I was talking to the other dads, shout out to the Dadley Boys on the What Culture Wrestling side of things, that I feel like you're only as good as your last amount of sleep, which does go across all of life. But in parenting, it's like the amount of stuff you're putting up with day to day, and more for a newborn for the first few weeks, you're only as able to put up with that as the amount of sleep you got beforehand. And some days it's just, you're just so strung out, just being like, how could I do anything at this point? But then you get a few more hours and it's like, oh, okay, cool.
Well, for what it's worth, you're looking fresh. I expected in a way for you to come in like a grey husk, but you look very healthy, you look very good. It's nice to have you back.
Thank you. I did a big shave the other day.
Did you?
I thought I did one of them, and I got a haircut and everything. You know that whole phrase of like finding your way back?
Yes.
It's like, I was like, Ben Affleck used it in that movie about basketball, but that whole term of finding your way back. I feel like a lot of stuff with having a child and the newborn and learning so much stuff day to day is finding your way back to being like, what the hell did I even do before? And how do I get back on this horse?
It's true, man. It can be true in a bunch of different experiences in life, I think. Like, I was messaging Adam Nicholas the other day because I had a few weeks where my MH had dipped a little bit and I was similarly trying to find my way back. And I joked about it at the beginning, right? But it was recommitting. I think we even talked about it in the off-topic pod. It was recommitting to that skincare routine where I kind of felt like, oh, I'm back.
Self-care, you know what I mean? Man.
I'm getting back into a routine. I'm feeling myself a little bit more. Mm. And there's something to be said about when you are not feeling yourself and you kind of claw back just some kind of sense of, I feel all right in my own skin. This is not as bad as it could be.
No, man, it's definitely. Like, I mean, one thing that they told us, like, on the nurse side, on the doctor's, on the medical professional side, is that you do need to prioritize yourself. You need to do something for yourself. In my case, that was ordering a ton of McDonald's at one point and just sitting with various big brown bags full of fast food and just being like, this is just for me, this.
Yeah.
And it's lovely. But yeah, self-care, validity, making sure that you, are able to prioritize yourself will do you wonders, depending on what you need.
A lot of solid advice in there.
Thank you.
Including the new realization that McDonald's is an evening meal.
That's not a meal. No, it's not. I had it at 2 p.m. I haven't changed that much. I'm not having a McDonald's at 7 p.m.
He still hates Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
We'll get to that. We'll get to some video games. Understandably, I've only played video games in very small chunks. But to be honest, because of how much my kid is sleeping in interstitial amounts, I can get an hour here and there of various video games. So I have played Stellar Blade, and I've been playing a ton of Final Fantasy on Switch. Massive shout out to the one-handed video games. Ha ha ha, as some sort of weird innuendo. But what I mean is, I've been playing Marvel Snap as well.
Oh, nice.
Which is by the dude that made Hearthstone, apparently.
Is it really?
It's just a nice little card game. But you'll realize as you're trying to coerce an infant with one arm that you only have one arm free. And there's only so many games that you can play one-handed. But Marvel Snap is one of them.
I think that's why mobile games are so big. Genuinely. The amount of parents who must play Candy Crush with one hand while they've got a child in the other is probably crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But shout out to Marvel Snap. And but like I said, I've only played games interstitially, most of it being stuff that's been on Switch. And then occasionally I got a few hours in on Stellar Blade. But we'll talk about Stellar Blade. We've got some Final Fantasy stuff, Dragon's Dogma 2, and maybe Gears of War 3 if we have time. Stellar Blade, though, I don't know where you're at on the whole game. I've only played about 3 hours.
Yeah.
And I like it a lot. I like it more as a statement. Like, I like it more as, like, it's a new IP. It blew up so much. It got mainstream recognition. Everyone was talking about it. It's hugely impressive in regards to, like, the presentation of it, the fact that it shows off what the DualSense can do, the PS5 can do. It feels very next-gen. Mm. Like, it looks very beautiful. And I just kind of looked at it, and I was like, Shift Up as a dev have only made one game beforehand.
Yeah.
A mobile game at that. I obviously made a ton of money. They put it all into this. And I know that Sony helped get this over the finish line. But I was just playing through this going, like, this gives me hope for the entire industry.
Interesting.
If you can come out of almost nowhere, and I get the sex appeal of, like, I get why the sex appeal behind the main character of Eve helped propel the mainstream side of it and the general recognition of it, but it doesn't knock the fundamentals. Like, and I don't think the combat's perfect. I don't think it's a perfect video game. But like I said, it gives me hope for the non-franchise future that something can come out of nowhere, get this much conversation, and be this good, like, on the execution side. That was my big takeaway was, like, the music is gorgeous.
It is.
Love the vibe. And for the most part, I like the combat, but I do have issues with that too.
Yeah, 100%, man. Like, oh, I mean, there's a lot to get into, right? And first off, actually, I realized while I was playing all of these games while you're away, I was thinking, what's the point if I can't if I can't talk to them, talk about them to Scott? What's the point?
I know
of
what's
video
life.
Games? I was like, where's me purpose?
I'm talking to my newborn. He's like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
I know. I've not played Stellar Blade yet.
I'm yelling at people in the street. Like, have you heard about Stellar Blade? Scott is disposed with his child. No, Stellar Blade is a strange one, and I like it for a lot of the reasons that you mentioned there. Primarily it being that console debut for this studio because it's so confident and it's so polished in many ways. It's not perfect, like you mentioned. I still think there's loads of room for improvement. And I said this in the review, but my favorite thing about the game is that you can feel the devs getting more confident and getting more sure of themselves as it goes on. I know you said you've only played for 3 hours, but...
I just got a gun.
Interesting.
I just got a gun.
There we go.
Nice little gun.
But the more the more bosses I face, the more levels I progress through, I thought, you're getting to grips with what this game is. To me, honestly, the first 3 hours, I was a bit trepidatious about it. Yeah. I thought, ooh, this is a bit wonky. I didn't think the story was there. Honestly, I thought that first area you go through was like graphical sludge.
It's weird, isn't it?
It was pretty at all. I thought, why are you starting with this? But I thought it got better. And by the end of it, I was looking forward to a Stellar Blade 2.
Right.
Whereas at the start of it, I was thinking, I might not even get through this.
I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people drop off. Like, I've not looked at the trophy data. I don't even know if there are that many trophies across that opening chunk. But I wouldn't be surprised if people drop off. I don't think it puts a good foot forward. I do really like the world. I like the lore. I like the whole thing about like an abandoned humanity and then trying to. It's very Nier.
Yeah.
Once you know Nier's Automata's full scope, and like obviously Shift Up said they were massively inspired by Nier. But I quite like the whole thing about like what are the nativas, like the enemies. I like the whole desolate landscape thing. As much as I agree with you that it's like it is a bit of a sludge in that environment, it did make me go, like, I do kind of love this though. Like, I love Darksiders. That's all set like in a post-humanity world, and then something like Nier as well. Like, I just, there's something about like a super futuristic being going back to like old humanity that I quite like as a vibe. And then when that's backed in this case by the music, I was like, this is just fun to explore, even though there's not that much exploration you can do because it's quite linear. But I think it puts a bad foot forward. And I hate how many, like, oh, the generator needs power, or you need to go find the key card lock, and like, oh, this, you need to go find the power for this. I was like, oh, what are we doing? Like, this is a horrible way to ingratiate people to what is otherwise quite a fluid combat system.
100%, yeah, it is very stop and start, I thought. And yeah, I just,
because the bosses are so good.
They are. And the combat gets really good, I thought. To me, once you hit like the first open world and you get to the hub city that you spend a lot of time in, that's where it all started to click, because you get way more agency over your character. You get to customize her, for one, and you get to kind of freely explore and focus on what kind of... There's not loads of build variety, but you get a little bit more control over that, I thought. And yeah, for me, all of that stuff at the start with the generator, even with the visual design of it, it's so Xbox 360.
Right. Like, I'd go further back than that, mate.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Ah, for me, it felt like I was playing the most pristine Xbox 360 game I've ever played, because I know this, you know, predates that era, but you've got loads of box puzzles. You've got shimmying across the little
it's climbable
handholds. You've got QTEs, I kind of wasn't expecting. You've even got that gimmick, which I love. I don't know if you've got here yet, but it's essentially water level puzzles where you're in a sewer.
I despise that. Oh my God. That was when I was like, what the F is, what have you done?
They do that a few times. All of these things are repeat all the way throughout the game. And if, admittedly, I think if you're a player who's like, this is dated, this is crap, that's unfortunately not going to go away. I liked it. It made me feel like I was playing Spider-Man, the movie, the game on PlayStation 2, doing all of those sewer levels and those water rays and stuff. But it kind of...
Oh, sorry, there was one bit where it was like the generator's out, the door is out of power, you need a fusion cell for that, and it was round the corner.
Yeah.
Literally round the corner down a little corridor. It took me 3 seconds. Yeah. What are we doing, Shift Up? Like, you don't need to fill that much like time for the level.
There is a lot of that. I feel like, for me, it mostly stays away from filler to a great degree. You know, I completed it all in 30 hours, and that was like a completionist run,
nice.
And it felt satisfying. It didn't feel like I was having my time wasted, apart from a few side missions, which send you back to those areas you've already been through, and you're fighting the same enemies, and it's like, this is the one element I think you could have just omitted entirely.
Right.
And I wonder how much developers, especially, you know, first-time console developers like ShiftUp, are just scared about having a shorter game, you know? Like, I don't think those side missions were even necessarily needed, and thankfully they are entirely optional. And it just, to me, it didn't make sense, because they stand out so much, even though they're so minor to the overall experience, because the rest of it is so focused and so tight.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, like, the when you get to that the main hub city, I think it's called Eidos, when you get there, like, some of the missions you're doing is like, go find a cat, or like, someone's gone missing, but then you go to the location, there's a body there, you interact with it, you go back to the bulletin board. I do like that they suggest, do you want to walk back to the bulletin board to cash in the mission? And it's like, I wish that was just standard in most open world games. But I think, like, the enemy variety is, the enemy designs are awesome as well. Yeah. Very unique, like, just, I don't know, something with like a chainsaw for a face or whatever, and it's like, there's just a lot going on for it, like, in its favor. And like, I do find that, like, obviously the thing is, like, I've been way out of the loop for the last month. Every now and then, when I would put Twitter on in Stellarblade's case, I would see some furore over the fact that some costume changed, whatever, that overshadowing the reality of what the game is and what it can stand for in regards to, like I said, like a new IP, a dev knocking it out the park for their second game, making something in 3D and doing it this well, like, that's the real story, or should be. And so, like, yeah, like, I get the I'm actually gonna forget the name of the model that they used, that the Eve was inspired by the main character, but the sex appeal side of it is, or has been, such a big lightning rod, a big talking point, for better or worse, that it's a bit of a shame that they don't get to have their flowers for how much they've pulled off.
That's it, man. I mean, again, I don't want to get into the controversy too much, but to log on and see so many people complaining about a little bit of lace that was added in that they wanted to do anyway, it's like, guys, I said this with Sai in the UBP last week, just take the W, take the win. You know, this is a game that you thought people weren't going to like, and everyone kind of liked it.
Yeah.
Enjoy it. Like, enjoy the game.
Yeah, it's also good. Like,
and there is so much more to it, like you said, than that kind of controversy overshadowing things, because the more that's talked about, it's like, but there's so many interesting parts of this game.
Well, then there's like such an assumption that the game is throwaway in that regard, that the only positive is this like overtly sexual character. Yeah. And like, yeah, like, Eve is gorgeous, but like, that's just so not a thing. Like, you know, like, it's just not. There are so many other positives in regards to the way that it moves and plays. The presentation of it, the animation, like, there was an interview with Shifter where they talked about how proud they are of their animations, and I think it's a double-edged sword, because I think the one knock that I have is that you can't cancel out of an animation to dodge or block certain animations. You can't anyway,
right?
And like, if you're reading an enemy and they go a certain color, like blue or purple, which means you have to do a specific counter or dodge out the way, it's not as responsive as I would want it to be if you're bringing those mechanics into a game. Like, if you're literally going to have a combat system that is color coded to be like, when they do this color, you hit back and circle, but if you've already committed to a move, your mid move, they do their thing, and then you can't cancel your move to respond.
Yeah.
That's really annoying. And like, the only times I've died have been when I've been locked into an animation that I couldn't see coming beforehand.
Yeah, it's a frustrating one, because I played it before they patched out the input lag, and instantly I thought, this is nowhere near as responsive as I want it to be. And I do think, similar to Rise of the Ronin, that it is caught between styles, like, it's half a Souls like, it's half a DMC like, and I just don't think it quite nails
the balance, true,
especially when it starts shifting between linear levels and more open levels. And towards the end, it's so action packed and it's so immediate that I just kind of thought, you didn't even need the Souls stuff necessarily, because you don't really commit to the bit that much. And that, you know, lack of agency over the character, or the lack of, I don't know, there's a lot of flair to the game, but the resistance to letting you just indulge in that stuff is kind of strange. I do want to go back to Eve for a second, though, because when I first started Eve, I was like, I don't vibe with this character at all.
Barely a character at the beginning.
I didn't even like the design of the costume. I thought,
oh, I do.
I thought she felt very bland to me, but the more customization options that opened up, the more I felt connected to it. To me, it reminded me a lot of Cal Kestis in Jedi Survivor. In the original game, Jedi Fallen Order, I thought he was fine, but he was like a wet blanket. I thought there was nothing visually striking about him. I thought as a character, he was a bit one-note. He was all right. You know, he was an okay protagonist. But then for whatever reason, when Jedi Survivor came around, and suddenly you got that bit of control over his look, to me, it endeared me so much towards him. It helped that the writing was better. But that kind of happened with Eve. As soon as I got to dye her hair or change her hairstyle.
You could dye her hair?
I dyed it, yeah, man, of course.
I've changed the length of the ponytail. I know you could change the color of it.
I changed the length of the ponytail. I dyed it. I gave her some glasses and I gave her a bunch of different costumes. Oh. And it just felt like she had a bit more to it, like a bit more personality. And that definitely comes through in the writing as well. It's not just me imprinting my own, you know,
version
of her onto her. Yeah. But the writing, I think, gets better. And without spoiling anything, there's an element of her that's like really cold and kind of violent. And yes. I was like, that's surprising. I didn't expect that wrinkle to her characterization. So that's another way that I think it gets better, because I first started and I was like, okay, I get what you're doing here. You've got this overtly attractive model, you're sexualizing her in the actual cutscenes themselves. Mm-hmm. But I was like, I'm not connecting to that. I don't feel like she's a character that I want to follow. But then that kind of got fleshed out way more. I will say that on the sort of sexualization element, like that's, like, I think other people have better takes on it than me, but it did detract for me, honestly, in a few areas, because it's fine, I think, making her a sexual character herself, but there were some times, man, later on in the story where they're trying to do a serious beat and the camera will just linger on her backside.
Oh, yeah.
It will, like, she'll be speaking and it'll be like just a shot of her breast. And it's like, that's when it goes too far for me, because you're undermining the story, right? It's like, are you taking this seriously or are you not? Mm. You can't do both, I don't think, in those moments, because it's not really played as a gag. It's played almost dismissive of its own story, and I'm like, you could have just not done that, and it would have been fine. Like, you just,
well, it's like,
what do we gain?
I think these conversations are interesting, because it's like, you look at characters that are like massively sexually charged, like Bayonetta, and as far as I remember, and I haven't actually finished Bayonetta 1 or 2, but I've played a lot of both of them, at no point in the game's cutscenes, the portrayal of Bayonetta, is the camera leering on her in a way, like the sexual power, the sexual portrayal of Bayonetta is like, she's in charge of the whole thing, and it's like, you will kind of submit to her in a way. Obviously they play that out in the animations that you get, and the power-ups and everything, and that is almost the line to try and walk, and it's like, if it feels like it's getting leery in the cutscenes and it's like it's more voyeuristic on behalf of the audience, then that kind of takes the power away from the character. And I think that's something that Stellar Blade goes back and forward on, where it's like, you can have a super sexy character who just happens to be super sexy, but the second you start panning over them in like the Michael Bay kind of way, Transformers style, the way that Michael Bay used to shoot Megan Fox, then that can start to feel a bit more gross or right towards the line of like, you actually want us to be like, whoa, lads, hey, look at that.
I think that's absolutely spot on. I think that's a great take. You know, and again, I definitely recommend perspectives that aren't mine that are way smarter on this. But yeah, that's the kind of vibe that I got. You know, a lot of people were comparing it to Hades 2, and it's like Hades 2 is actually kind of more explicit in terms of the character model. But to me, it just is more congruous, because it's like that character is defined by that sexuality, where with Eve, there sometimes is a disconnect where it's like the sexuality isn't really part of her as a character, and it's not something that she necessarily has control over. It sometimes is just to be leered at, especially when you get those cutscenes, and it's like, that could be better.
Yeah, totally. I think it's interesting. I like it. Like, it's funny whenever you look at anything like this, where like you'll get anime fans or whatever, and it's like, I love anime. I'm not judging anyone for this, but you sometimes get certain character aesthetics that are like ridiculously over-sexualized, huge boobs, whatever it is, and then it's, oh, they look super young, but then in the lore, it's like, well, they're 5,000 years old, so it's okay. Yeah. To Lear, and I was like, stuff like that is always where it gets weird. And I think in regards to Stellar Blade, like the way the lore is written is that like Eve is like an angel, and she's like described as this sort of like extremely powerful, like almost like mercenary fighter, and it's like everyone looks up to her, and it's like, I like that's fine, I have no problem with that. But it is interesting seeing the hoops that some creators will jump through to try and justify all that stuff, and it's like, I personally have zero problem with that, at least so far from what I've played. But yeah, when you look at the costumes that you can get, I quite like how intricate they are. Like, I'm not a fashion person at all. I mean, look at me. But like, when I look at the costumes that you get in Stellar Blade, they're so intricate. And like, that initial costume that you get, where it's almost like a high school tie with like a skin tight suit,
weird,
different
right?
plastics and rubbers and materials. And I was like, this really feels like you hired someone who does does know, like, has an eye for fashion to at least make a statement in regards to making sure that Eve's costumes stand out. And there's a one you get at the beginning called, like, Red Passion or something, which is more like just a blouse and jeans combo. And I was like, well, even that feels like it was curated.
Yeah.
And it's like, I like the element of curation here, even if some of them obviously lean into, look how skin tight this thing is, at least it feels like a group of people intended it to be detailed.
I think there's some great detail in the costumes. Like, there were a few that I really loved. There's one bright yellow and black jumpsuit that's kind of evocative of the bride in Kill Bill or Bruce Lee or whatever.
Right.
And I love that. It was like, you know, it's like this baggy sort of sweatpants and jumper combo, but you have these tassels on the arms as well, which look really cool in motion. There are a few that I really enjoyed, but honestly, I was playing it around my partner and she said, like, the only thing she's offended about in the game is how bad the fashion is. She was like, this could be so good, but the fashion is just...
Yeah, my partner was...
Why are these colours, Mitch? Like, they just don't have... She said that he didn't quite have the eye for it in that regard, which made me laugh.
I'd be curious, because that whole thing about, like, I mentioned Bayonetta before, and I forget the name of the woman, but, like, Bayonetta was conceptualized by a woman, and it's like that whole idea of... I would love to have more interviews with the creators of Eve, of Stellar Blade, of, like, the fashion side of it, because they're making a statement. Like, I feel like the skin really stand out here. Any other dev would have charged £15, £20, dollars, whatever, for each of these costumes, but you get tons of them in the game. But yeah, I think the aesthetics are a big part of the appeal. That's like, I like being in that world. And that when the combat works and you flow with the animations, it does look beautiful.
Yeah.
It's just that sometimes some of the combat challenges they throw at you, like, and especially when they're not telling you an enemy's winding up for an attack behind you or whatever, that stuff can just be really annoying. And it's like, and like I said, because they've done the interviews and they've talked about how much they love their animations, I'm like, I totally get it. But then you've also wanted to do these Soulsian challenges of like monster closets and all these big arena combat areas that just get really annoying when I'll do your fun, like, anime adjacent, over the top escape power fantasy, but then if you're going to try and cut that off, like, it doesn't necessarily mesh.
No, it is difficult. I do think it gets better with that stuff the more it progresses, even with the visual style. Like, there are so many great late game levels where I almost think, I kind of wish you'd front loaded this. Right. It's a great payoff, but these are beautiful. They're evocative. The design is excellent. Why was I going through that drab city to begin with? I know you need that progression, but yeah, man, I just felt like by the end, it knew what it wanted to be, and it was kind of unashamed about that, and that goes down to the story as well, which just goes absolutely crazy in the best possible way towards the end. But yeah, in terms, last thing on the combat, I do feel like it needed to commit to one or the other. Even stuff like parrying, it teaches you that really early on, but it almost doesn't even feel essential. Like, you can parry until you get that finishing move, but I barely even used that in the game. It just didn't feel the focus of combat in the same way that it does in Rise of the Ronin or Sekiro. In dodging, kind of doesn't. Everything feels like you have the option to use it, but nothing really feels like the focus. And I think that makes for a good combat system, but not an incredibly satisfying one.
It's super flashy. Like, when I'm playing through it, like I said, when everything syncs up, it feels like you're playing like some tech demo that would show off what a PS5 can do back in like 2020 or something. And we'd all be wowed at how beautiful the animations flow together and everything. But I'm going to keep going. Like, if I get enough time to finish it, I'd like to see it through. Like I said, I actually quite like the world they're setting up, and I'm curious about what payoffs they have.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Let's talk about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Oh,
a game that I kind of hate it.
Brother.
Just kind of hate it.
I was going into this with dirt low expectations. That is not a phrase, but I'm going to use it.
It is.
Because you and Cy White both were not hot on this game at all. And I was expecting to really dislike it. But I wanted to see it through because I love the original. And I was like, why is it getting all of these 9s out of 10s and stuff? So I finally jumped in last week and I've already played through 30 hours and 10 chapters. And I'm really enjoying,
I think you're enjoying it.
I'm really enjoying it. I'm not loving it. I don't think it's going to be my game of the year. Mm. But as a consistent experience, I'm getting so much more out of it than I did with Remake.
Right.
I was texting you saying that Remake definitely has higher highs. I was way more invested in the character moments in that game and the plot beats and even the environments. But the lows of Remake have come nowhere near Rebirth for me. It's just like everything that I had trouble with in Remake is optional in Rebirth. And there have been a few areas where they don't quite get the pacing right and they do kind of mess up in the main story. Yeah. But for the most part, every single time I go to a new chapter, apart from one, I've loved what they've had to offer, whether that's new mini games or distractions or whatever it is. It's really worked for me, Scott Tilford.
That's
this,
good.
Unfortunately, is my Final Fantasy VII. And I don't skewer you with that, even though I know it will. I just love these characters, man. I really do.
Well, that's the main thing. Like, as long as you're enjoying it, that's obviously the main thing. And if you're still vibing with the characters and you like the posse, Cloud, Barrett, Tifa, Aerith, whatever, and you're on that adventure and you're enjoying it, that is the main thing. I could not get away. Because the thing is, when they did Remake in 2020, I did that whole video. We all did lots of podcasts on it about the way that Remake ends. I'll do spoilers for Remake back in 2020. The way that game ends, where they essentially acknowledge like the timeline they're in, and they fracture it, and they do this whole thing where they're gang are like fighting time and destiny, and it's like that whole manifestation of what the fandom would want Final Fantasy VII to be, and they're breaking out into something else, and they call it the Unknown Journey. And back then, and they play the Sephiroth card, and you fight Sephiroth. Obviously, in the original, he's not there at that point. And back in 2020, I was like, okay, I'll go with this. I'm absolutely on board for, like, you want to do this bold new thing. You want to acknowledge the fandom. You want to acknowledge the fact that you're remaking Final Fantasy VII that many years later. Let's do it. Let's go with this. And I hope you have something cool down the line. And then playing Rebirth, and they only double down on the filler, on the fact that they have broken the story. Like, if you don't have the comparison, it won't matter. And that's beautiful. Like, God, I wish that was me. Because they could not have effed this up the wall any harder unless they were paid to do so. Yeah. Like, it is ludicrous how much they break the pacing, the story, the general progression of the story. Like, so much of Rebirth, I'll not do spoilers for Rebirth, but so much of Rebirth is just following the dudes in the black robes.
Yes.
Because they have no substitute for, in the original, Sephiroth is still a mystery, and he's just killed the head of Shinra in the original. So you're trying to find out who Sephiroth is and chase this guy. Mm. And that's a way bigger reason to leave Midgar and everything else. As opposed to in this, it's like, oh, the guys are mumbling and they're on their way somewhere, and we're not actually going to talk to them. We're just going to sort of follow them for 60 hours and then we'll do something at the end. I think they do an abysmal job of trying to pay off the potential of what was at the end of Remake. And when you have those comparisons and you know how tightly this story should be or could have been told, I only agree with Sai's tweet after she finished it. She ended up watching the ending on YouTube because she hated the pacing so much. I played through the whole thing. But it's just a waste of time.
Oh, that's brutal. I get a lot from it because, like you say, I don't have that comparison to the original. Mm. I literally don't know anything that happens after Midgar apart from the fate of one character, which is like the most well-known thing in the world.
Yes.
But I don't know the context of that. I don't know anything. You know, even in the original game, I at least knew what Midgar was. I knew what Mako was. I knew what the reactors were. I kind of knew stuff that was happening. I knew about Sephiroth, for instance. Here, I don't have any point of comparison at all. So it's felt nicely paced to me. It's definitely way more lethargic than the original, the original remake. But for me, that's working because this time around, it feels like a proper adventure with my buddies. And I worry because, you know, knowing that this story has to have some tragedy in it at some point, I wonder whether this is going to be the point, again, no spoilers, I don't know the ending, of getting me invested in these characters to break my heart towards the end. I don't know if that's the intention, but that's what it feels like right now because it feels like I'm on this swashbuckling tour of, you know, the world with my pals.
Yes. That has, welcome to Final Fantasy.
There we go, right? And that's really worked for me, whether I'm going to Costa del Sol or whether I'm going to Gold Saucer or whether I've just landed in Cosmo Canyon now. That sense of adventure has been right at the heart of it. And
the again, scale of it's lush.
The scale of it is lush. And without that comparison point to the original and how it should have gone, to me, the mysteries that they've raised in Rebirth have been really interesting. Right. The stuff they do with Cloud and Tifa right at the beginning got me in instantly. Mm. I think they should have done more with that in the 30 hours, sorry.
We'll not do like bigger spoilers, but I mean, the game's been out for so long at this point, but like, do you mean in terms of when you see their bodies in the rubble at the very beginning?
Yeah. Right. So you get that scene of essentially what I can only assume are two timelines where you control Zack and then you have the gang from the end of what I presume is the end of Remake, and you have Zack and I think it's Tifa who's dead and like Barret's dead and Aerith is still alive at that point. And then you have that juxtaposed with Cloud, who is presumably continuing from the end of Remake, and they have that flashback where Cloud remembers what happened with Sephiroth in the village, and then he has that thing with Tifa where he says, like, you died. And Tifa's like, to the others, like, Cloud was never there. I don't know where he's getting this memory from, right? And that was such a cool moment for me. Yes. I wasn't expecting that to happen. And I thought at that point I was in for something really special.
Cool.
They've just revisited that at the end of the chapter that I've just finished. And that is my favorite chapter so far. So there was a lot of filler in between. But even then, in the filler, I got to experience other characters' stories, like getting Barret's backstory, getting Red's backstory, meeting Kate Sith, which is the pronunciation. In this game, it's Kate Sith. So I'm going to run with that because it sounds better.
Wrong. It's catchy.
In getting to know some other side characters
have
as well.
It's
worked for me. I'm just...
Yes. Yeah. No, that's lovely. I think it's interesting listening to anyone who doesn't have the comparison and then still latching onto those plot beats in regards to the way that they're presented in this, like the Tifa Cloud thing. All the stuff with Zack is the most propulsive stuff to me because that's the most direct continuation for what they tease at the end of Remake, as in like everything is fractured, what the hell is going on? How can this happen? All that stuff that happens with Zack and Aerith at the very beginning. That's when I was the most on board with the new vision.
Yeah.
And I can go with that. The way that they tie it all off, I find that you'll see when you get there, but I don't think they know how to maintain meaning.
Yeah.
And it just gets a bit too lost in the experimental nature of the idea of what they do at the end of Remake.
Interesting.
And being like, how do we... My throat's giving up on me because it's the most I've talked in a while. But the way that they do that feeling at the end of Remake of like, oh, I have no idea what you guys are going to do.
Yeah.
And that's so exciting. Now I know what they're doing and it's terrible.
I'm not going to look at you when I say this because I don't even want the idea that your face could give anything away.
Okay.
But here's what I'm thinking so far.
Yes.
So I feel like something big has been quite signposted. So when you get to the haunted hotel, you talk to Kate Sith and they give you like some... They give you some advice of what not to do. And one of them is like, you're going to like lose the thing you love the most. Mm. So I'm wondering now whether one of my party's going to die and whether it's going to be informed by some kind of affinity meter and whether we're going to have a big loss. And I'm worried about that because Tifa is my girl.
Yes.
I went on a date with her.
Yes. And, did you make out?
We didn't make
it. Me neither, but apparently you can.
Can you?
Yeah.
Oh, I love her, man. I think She's Cloud's true girlfriend for yes, me, yes. Not Aerith.
Yep. Welcome to the discourse.
I love her so much. Yeah. I don't even know how it's a competition. I mean, I love Aerith. Don't get me wrong.
Well, you've not. But the thing is, you haven't had. The reason that Tifa and Cloud is the real relationship, obviously yeah. Aerith and Zach, but like you've not had you don't know the full picture yet.
No.
But it's interesting that you still have these feelings.
They have such a strong connection. Like I'd be fine if they were just pals, but their like friction I find incredible. The sadness that Tifa has behind those eyes. I just think.
Oh, you've got so much to go.
I know, man. Like I just did a bit last night with her that was. Oh, I thought it was amazing. My favorite part of the game so far, but I love her as a character, and
yeah, man,
I don't want anything bad to happen to her, and I'm scared something bad is going to happen to her. And every time Cloud is mean to her, I'm like, what are you doing?
Oh, I don't know where you come down on Cloud overall in these new games, but he's such a dick.
Two thoughts on Cloud in this game.
Yes.
One, he's might be the sexiest man I've ever seen in my life. He has incredible facial structure. I look at him.
But everybody does.
It's true. Yeah. But I look at him, man. I'm like, you've got a beautiful face. Yeah. I love his earring as well.
Fair.
That rules.
I like his wolf earring in Advent Children.
I've never seen that.
You should have to what? Check you should up. Watch Advent Children.
Maybe.
Do it after this.
Maybe if I do it after this. So I love his visual design, as I love everyone's. Mm-hmm. But Cloud's like dickishness. I can get behind.
Right.
I think he's a prat. At some point,
and he's a ninny hammer.
Yeah. He was even more so in the first game,
right?
And I like how they've softened him this time around. But I like him coming out of his shell, and yes. I like this idea that he doesn't even know who he is because he just said in the chapter that I've been in there, like his mind's so messed up that he's like, I don't even know who the real Cloud is. Yeah, I feel like there's a bunch of people warring inside of me. And I'm like, I like this characterization.
I'm curious to see what you think when you get the full picture. Cause they've remixed some elements in regards to like when they bring them in. Like the fact that you have a Cloud at this point in the story that is this fractured is like a whole new thing. So it's, there's like ways that they're remixing the story, and the thing is like, I should have said this hours ago when we started talking about this, but like most people who have played Rebirth seem to love it. Like the sales aren't there for it, which I totally called at the beginning. I totally said it wasn't going to do very well because it just didn't feel like it was going to. But the people who actually have checked it out are all like, it's a masterpiece, it's game of the year, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know where that's coming from because I think it's horrifically designed in an open world space. And I think it's just so full of filler. And because it is a remake, there are those comparisons. And even if you don't have the comparisons, I still think it's full of filler anyway. But still, it's ambitious. I'm glad that it exists. I just think the story's lost all meaning. I think Final Fantasy VII as an entity has lost all meaning.
Right.
Like it just is this little cottage industry within Square Enix. They tried to do a battle royale with it. They've got Ever Crisis. Sorry, they've got whatever that new one's called, Eternal Crisis, the mobile game, where it's another remake. And it's you just pay money to put Aerith in different costumes and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And it's just it's horrible, but everything's canon because now of course it is. And it's lost all meaning. And it's like the original had a really good, solid, important message, as many Final Fantasies do. And by the end of this one, maybe you'll like what they do. But the reason I haven't done any a few people have messaged going, are you not doing videos on this? Are you not going to cover this? By the time I hit credits, I had no idea what I would say other than F this, where I was just like, it's nothing. It's not, I have nothing to say for it. They absolutely killed it. But I mean, a lot of people who seem to like it, the excitement I had at the end of Remake was thoroughly neutralized by the end of Rebirth. And
right.
I do not care about Part 3. I'll play it. I'll live Final Fantasy 7 as much as the next guy. But what a mess.
I'm intrigued to see where it leaves me because I've heard from a lot of people that the ending isn't all that and doesn't fill them with too much confidence.
That'll only help you really because then you're not going in.
True.
You know, if you go in with, I felt like I went in with just open mind or whatever, like looking forward to seeing what the grand plan is. And then when you see the grand plan, it's like,
it really was good to have that sort of sense of tempered expectation going into it, especially knowing that there was so much filler in it. Like I've skipped almost all of the open world stuff.
Right.
That isn't a major side mission because I don't want to do that. Like, for whatever reason, I think the battle system is amazing.
Yes.
But the rewards that are tied to it, I just don't care about. Like, I'm not too bothered about new summons or even like even new weapons, really. That stuff just isn't hitting my lizard brain in the way that it does in other open world games. So the rewards for doing the towers or the live stream and repeated activities, I'm not...
Hold square.
I'm personally not missing out on much, so I'm focusing on the missions that have story, because the story is the reward for me at this moment in time. And that has really streamlined the experience. Like I said, I'm on chapter 10 with 32 hours played, and I'm pretty sure you were entering like chapter 6 or 7 after 60 hours played. So
yeah, I was trying to do everything until it just killed me. But like there's a lot of really good character writing in the side missions, but they're nearly all 3 to 4 step side missions.
Yes.
And it's a lot of go pick 7 flowers, go do whatever, and then at the end you'll get a nice little cutscene. But like after a while it was just horribly designed.
I can see that. Yeah, I can see people just giving up on those side missions. I stuck with them because they are a bit lengthy in terms of how many steps are involved to complete them, but it was always worth it for me. It was never too much time. Mm. It never felt like too much of a distraction. By the time I'd finished those side missions, I felt ready to move on to the next main thing. But I can see why you would just go, why am I chasing this dog around when I should be chasing Sephiroth around?
Literally. What did you think of Chocobo Stealth?
Oh, that sucked, man. That
so the thing is,
sucked.
Right? I can't get... like my grounding on this game is I can't get past how they conceptualized that, coded it, spent the money, refined, quote-unquote, those areas. The bit when you've got to hoover up the Mako, horrific. The bit when you've got to do Chocobo Stealth, horrific. There's a bit with a chicken later on.
I did a side mission with a chicken last night where I have like a little box and I'm pulling
box. That's the thing.
I was cursing.
Yep.
I really was. I couldn't believe it.
I went through stages of grief with that where I was just like, what are you doing to me? What are you doing to me? Like, just you take something that I love so much, like Final Fantasy VII, you take this thing and you know I'm going to be there for it. It felt like a human experiment. Like, genuinely, like, that's a horrible, horrible gameplay sequence. And it's just like, you've got to try and entice a chicken to come towards you with a little rattler box thing.
Yeah.
And you've got to walk backwards towards the and you get further and further away, different chickens. And I that honestly broke me where I was like, what are you doing?
I think it's a practical joke. It's gotta be a joke on players. There are definitely a few moments like that. Like you said, the Chocobo Stealth was unforgivable. I'm so pleased they finally dropped that.
Well, there's one per world.
I'm not doing that anymore. No. I did the ones that unlock the chocobo, and I've not interacted.
Oh, they add more variables, quote unquote. But there's a chocobo stealth mission in every open world area.
Yeah. I see. That's what I like about it. It at least has that stuff as mostly optional.
Right.
Like they do onboard you with those side missions, but a lot of it you can just ignore. And I don't feel like I've lost anything from the experience. But I do think they throw everything at the wall in terms of those mini games. And to be fair, a lot of them I really enjoyed. Chocobo Racing, I thought was
awesome. That was great in the original.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it was.
Dog football, big fan.
Dog football, like Dog Rocket League. That was awesome. So they've hit more times than they've missed, and I quite like throwing everything at every quirky idea they have. I do think the game overall is too slow with its animations. I feel about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth what I imagine people feel about Red Dead Redemption 2.
Right.
The slowness in that game, to me, was purposeful. In Final Fantasy VII, I have no idea why it takes me seemingly 30 seconds to get into a vehicle or to climb a ladder. It's like, the rest of the game is so gamified and fast-paced and arcadey in spots. Why are we slowing down so much to do this? Ugh. There are annoyances like that that haven't been properly shook off from Remake.
Yeah.
But I will say all of that stuff is so much better than it was in Remake. They've streamlined a lot.
Yeah.
I do think it's kind of crazy that it could take, by the time Part 3 comes out, which will be, 14 years since this project first started, that they might finally get a fully fun and working game then. But they're getting there.
They're getting why? But it's not. It shouldn't be this hard.
No.
Like there's a particular box level that you'll come across later that is just that seems to be the one that broke a lot of people.
Right.
The chicken one was the one for me where I was like, I can't believe you coded this and put this in. And there's a box thing that's like it's this game's version of the walkway falling away from Remake, where it just takes you out of the main thread that you're supposed to be doing. But there are so many things like that where not only did you deviate so much from what would have been a more straightforward remake of the original story, but you put things in like go collect all the segways from around the Costa del Sol, like go find 10 piles of trash for Johnny, like I cannot get on board with that. Like,
right.
What are you doing to us? Like, what is that?
You know what, some of that I'm fine with. Again, I think it's because it's optional and I have It's on me to kind of jump into the Segway stuff. And I genuinely enjoyed the Segway stuff. I had fun what? As shirtless Cloud mishing around Costa del Sol on those Segways. That worked for me. I can see why you might think, why is this a Final Fantasy? Because I've never known anything different. I'm like, yeah, this is all right to me. However, there was one mission, in I think that chapter, where you go to the Dust Bowl and you have to do the Chocobo Reyes.
Yes.
But to do the Chocobo Reyes, you have to get 3 leafy greens for a particular Chocobo. And you have to do... This is the one time so far it's forced me into completing a bunch of minigames I didn't want to do. I didn't want to play 3 rounds of Queen's Blood because I've not... enjoyed that Blood. All the way through. I get people like it. I was actually talking to Simon.
Best thing in the
this.
Whole game.
To the people who love it, I'm sure it is. But for me, I just don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do these crap filler things to unlock a mini game. It's like that was the one time where I thought, this is the pacing from Remake and they've just not changed anything.
My thing is like, we should wrap this pod because we need to make room for the wrestling boys on the way in. But that whole thing of like, oh, the worst parts are optional, I don't accept that as like, I can't make peace with that because that's like having like a 3-course roast dinner, but there's an actual triple coiler on the side. But like, well, you just ignore it. Everything else is cooked beautifully. It's like, yeah, but it's right there. It's horrible. It stinks. Makes the whole thing look horrible. Like, and also like, and then it gets more personal where I'm like, I want to see what they've made. Like, I'm along for the ride for the Final Fantasy VII Remake, and you have this huge video game, but it is so horrifically designed, so abusive of a player's time or an individual's time in regards to how much filler there is in those various, like the Chocobo stealth or the mission design or whatever. So I can't get on board, even though it's a lot of people say that. Well, it's optional, so just don't bother with it.
Yeah,
I just can't accept that. Like,
I get what you mean. I totally respect it. I think the difference between you and I in that regard is I don't think it's quite a coiler. You know, I've still enjoyed all. Like, I think genuinely that every side activity in and of itself is fun to do. I know that might be controversial. I like the rhythm timing of the summons, and the only crap one I think is kind of pressing triangle at a specific point for the live stream. But that's so tiny that I don't mind doing it because I like following the birds and it always gives me a lot of materials to end with. They are the worst parts of the game.
Right.
But I think those are the most disposable as well. Intentionally, it's like you can do as much of this as you want. I understand your criticisms of the side quests as well, being like, look in 10 piles of trash or follow this dog. I had a lot of fun following the dog as much as I just slagged it off. Me and my partner were popping silly every time we had to do it. I thought the music was great on that side quest.
Music's phenomenal.
So like those side quests, I thought this isn't to the caliber of the main quest.
No.
But I didn't feel like I was forcing. I always wanted to do it because I wanted to do it. It wasn't because of a carrot at the end being dangled at the end of the stick. It was because I want to follow the dog.
I think it's just those things in moderation would be fine. Like you're saying you're not doing most of the optional stuff.
No,
so you've done a handful of it, you're okay with it. Whereas like I was like, and it's just so checkpointy. It's like, go interact with like 8 live streams. That's the same interaction every time. Like, you know, go climb the towers, go do the summons, do the rhythm mini game over and over and over again. It's the same thing over and over again. This is Ubisoft world design from 6, 7, 8 years ago that we all lambasted publicly for years. Yeah. And for whatever reason, everyone's like, wow, it's a masterpiece when it's this. And it's like, no, this is the same thing that we got sick of years ago.
That's a great comparison. Okay. And I don't know what you think about this. In fact, I probably do know what you think because you just said it. But to me, the issue was never with what you were doing in those Ubisoft games. To me, it was always that's all you were doing. And I know you might say that's all you were doing in Final Fantasy, but I felt like I was only dipping into that stuff in Final Fantasy. Yeah, the towers are one note. Yeah, the live stream is one note. But that's, for me, not the bulk of the side content in the way that it is in like those older Watch Dogs or Far Cry's or Assassin's Creed or whatever. Like, to me, those are very much activities. Then you have the side quests, then you have the main side quests, and then you have the main quests. So they're so far down the ladder, and it's like, those weren't the only options that I had at my disposal if I didn't want to do the main quest, if that makes sense.
That's true. I guess, yeah, I mean, like I said, like, my side of that is, like, when you get to those open world parts and they give you that big list of stuff you want to do, I want to see all of it. I want to see as much Final Fantasy VII Remake as an overall project as I can. But then once you indulge in that, it just starts feeling like this, like I said, it abuses your interest in the IP.
Hey, man, like, as someone who normally combs these open worlds, I totally get it. I almost feel hypocritical sitting here and going, saying that I ignored most of this stuff, but it's really given me a lesson. Because I just couldn't redo Remake. I couldn't have that same experience because I hated parts of that. I love thinking about that game. I love the idea of that game. I hate the idea of playing it in totality. I couldn't do it to myself. So this time around, I made a conscious decision. If I'm not having fun, I'm not engaging with it.
Right.
And it's actually changed my entire view of video games. I think I might just adopt this
going
forward.
You become me. That's what I used to do.
No, I know.
Oh, do you do?
Well, I want to see all the main stuff, but like, if I'm not going to collect all of the feathers anymore.
Good.
I feel like I'm off that hype. I'm weaning off.
You're never going to Days Gone yourself.
I'm never going to Days Gone myself ever again, Scott. I'm never going to Final Fantasy VII Remake myself ever again. And if Rebirth completely craps the bed, at least it's taught me that. A valuable lesson.
That's true. If it's worth anything, it's reaching the limit on bloat. We'll wrap this pod, and we won't talk about Dragon's Dogma 2 and stuff like that, but we'll do that in future pods, because Dragon's Dogma 2's secret endgame is the coolest thing that I've seen all year.
So good, so good.
We will get there. For now, this has been The Wind-Up. Don't think I did an intro, but I'm Scott Tilford. That's Josh Brown.
Lovely to have you back, Scott Tilford.
Thank you very much. Lovely to be heard by all of you, and we'll catch you throughout the week.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.